With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's Fail Critics. This is your host Tony Black replacing Steve Norman, who is off on another caravanning holiday in North Wales, as usual.
He can't get it away from
him. He's just always there, you know. And with me, as ever, is Owen Hughes.
Hello.
I don't know why I said as ever. I'm not on it all the time, and I never normally host. So why have I said that?
I'm on it every time you are, as ever.
And also, as ever, is Andrew Brooker.
Evening, gents.
Hello. What's all this noise, Tony? Where are we? What's going on?
I'm throwing my voice, and this is...
some of the worst Amdram shit I've ever
heard. Cheers, Brooker.
My ventriloquism skills, yeah. And now we're in a pub, actually, because we're all in the same room.
It's the first for Fail Critics. This is the first time that we've been recording in the same space as each other.
Yeah.
Normally, behind the curtains, a reveal.
Yeah.
It's on Skype, usually. But now, here we are.
Usually one of us is masturbating as we're recording.
I've had to keep my trousers on. It's a shame.
As have we all.
But I'm certainly hopeful that you're going to be able to hear this, which is why we need to talk proper loud. So if I'm shouting down the mic, I'm sorry, but just making sure. But yeah, we're in Birmingham.
Mm. What pub are we in?
We're in a pub called the Old Contemptibles,
which is the name of the episode.
Yeah, and I think it fits us three, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pretty much. This is, of course, my hometown, and sort of yours.
I mean, in the road. I mean, I'm half yummy, I'm half grubby.
You're a yummy.
Sorry, what's a yam yam?
A yam yam is someone from the Black Country.
Okay. Yeah.
Wolverhampton, West Bromwich, Dudley, sort of that area.
Okay.
Basically, it's because instead of saying you are, they say yam.
Yam.
Yam, alright?
How you doing?
You're alright.
How you doing? Yeah. Brooker. You were all
kids.
Exactly.
So we're not Northerners though, are we, Owen? We're Midlanders.
Exactly.
This is the thing.
You're Southern.
I have to drive past the Watford Gap to get to you.
True. It's North. Yeah, we're Northerners.
Fair enough.
But yeah, this is a first. And what isn't a first is that we don't really have a plan for the episode. That's
as usual.
Shambolic as ever.
Shambolic as ever. But what
there's a kind of a rough idea.
Yeah.
Because by the time people are listening to this, we'll already have an episode out.
Yeah.
Which will cover Resident Evil, which you were on,
yes,
Brooker, with John.
Yeah.
Although we are recording that in the future. Of when we're recording.
Just hoping we don't jinx anything.
It's a paradox. Yes. It was great. John was brilliant. I know Steve was at his all-time best.
Brooker's mysterious illness. Yes, however.
Yeah. But
we're not going to do new, particularly
really.
Any new films, are we? We might cover, I think you've seen Lovin', haven't you, Brooker?
Or Black Lives Matter. I've been holding on to that since I saw the trailer.
I almost think that should be the podcast.
Wow. You know, we were going to do this live. We're streaming through Facebook Live.
Yeah.
And the thing... It was too risky.
Are you glad we didn't?
It was just with Brooker in the room, two points down. It was.
It was a risk we weren't prepared to take. Yeah. It's also the Wi-Fi.
I know.
It is the other problem.
Technological failure.
I, I want to tell you both a little story about yesterday when I was possibly going to go and see Gold or Black Lives Matter. And I,
as it will now be known
yep. forever. And I did the most dithering thing you could ever imagine. I spent the whole day at work going, I don't really want to go and see Gold. Do I go and see Lovin'? I cancelled 2 cinema tickets because I couldn't make my mind up. And then I went all the way to a place called Solly Hall, which was where cinema was, only to get there and think, Gold looks shit. I don't want to go. I want to go home. So I got straight back on a bus and went to the Chippy.
Nice.
Instead. So I haven't seen Gold.
No. Me neither.
No?
I'm seeing it tomorrow or yesterday. Whenever it is. 4 days ago, I'm seeing it.
Yeah,
I'm booked in to see it after I see the Batman, Lego Batman movie. I kick the wife and kid home and I'll hang around at Cineworld looking like a bit of a loser waiting for them to start. But yeah, I haven't seen it yet. I've only seen Lovin'.
And there'll be a review on the website?
For Gold?
Gold?
Or Love? Yeah, Gold. Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah. And I've seen nothing, so I'm useless.
I've talked myself into a corner there, haven't I? I kind of have committed. To do a review.
No, you have to do this.
You don't have to. But there is going to be on the website by the time this episode is out, your end of January report. How's that been going? Watching 365 films in a month?
That's going well. That's going really well. I'm at the point where I can finish about July.
Just spend the rest of the year playing games, right?
Well, that's the hope. I hope that I get to 365, don't have to watch another film for the rest of the year, and don't have to watch Justice League.
Oh, yeah. We can all skip that one. What number are you on now?
I watched 66 on the train up here this afternoon.
Is it 2 a day?
That's pretty much. At least.
It's more than 2 a day. But no, we're 33 days into the year, so yeah.
Wow.
Blimey.
It's impressive.
Remembering, of course, there are at least 2 days where I record other podcasts where I don't have time to watch films before or after.
Machine.
Yeah,
Machine.
Absolute monster.
There's another film on the way home tonight. Downloaded onto the iPad, ready to go.
Essex Spacebook, of course.
Essex Spacebook.
No. I actually,
Anal Probes 3?
That's exactly what it is. I got Lucy to watch on the way home because it's a short one.
Have you seen Kill Keith?
No.
Have you seen what other ones?
Mob Handed?
Yes.
Did you watch Mob Handed?
I did. I got 20 minutes into it and went, fuck you, and turned it off.
You offered me Mob Handed. You said you wanted me to send it to you and you didn't. Maybe you should.
Let's remember this. I paid to watch Mob Handed as well. I rented that fucker off of iTunes and it was the worst thing I've ever seen.
I'm trying to think what else we
Killer
made
bitch.
Each other watch. Killer Bitch.
Was, Killer Bitch.
Yeah. I made Brooker. I physically took a copy of the disc to his house.
Yeah, exactly. I watched it in my living. That's the last time I drank more than
amazing.
I went through bottles and bottles just to try and make it pleasurable in some way.
Yeah. So there'll be others. I mean, what I'm getting at is I think you should do a marathon of at some point in your run through a 365
films. I am going to get to a point where I run out of my films that I want to watch and there's going to be nothing on at the cinema, so I'm going to have to scrape the bottom of the barrel.
Cutthroat Island.
Oh god, that far down the barrel.
Can I suggest one I've just seen on Now TV called Asian Connection with Steven Seagal?
Is it actually called Asian Connection with Steven Seagal? Because I may watch that if it is.
Yeah, it's like The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou. But yeah, you need that's one I think you should put on.
Is it as good as I Am Wrath?
I've not seen it, but
I Am Wrath was weirdly fun.
I heard this.
I really liked it. I do know why I watched it. I was off work ill, and I couldn't be bothered to go get a Blu-ray, so I just watched whatever was on Sky Cinema. And I watched I Am Wrath, and it was ghastly, but really fun.
Can we now institute a thing where we recommend films to you that you have to watch?
No.
Oh, come on! So much fun!
No, because I'll spend the next 300 of my films will be shit London gangster movies.
I was going to say, my advice to you is do not accept any recommendations from one Mr. Paul Field.
Yeah.
Never again?
Never again.
No.
We'll start with the old favourite. What have we been watching?
Yeah.
Over to you, Owen. What have you been watching this week?
Well, I have been watching some. Well, I say some. I watched a Danny Boyle film because I went onto Netflix to try and find a Danny Boyle film, and there weren't any. There's just not.
Strange.
Netflix is weird sometimes, isn't it?
It is strange.
They've got Trainspotting 2 in cinemas at the moment. Film 4 have just shown Trainspotting. And, you know, you think there'd be a bit of a way to draw in punters, but no.
They don't do that, though. They don't tend to get like all the films. Like when Marvel films come out, they don't have all the Marvel films. They have one or two. But
they have random ones, like randomly they're Guardians of the Galaxy.
It's weird. Yeah, it is strange.
So I didn't do that. So I went to my DVD shop and I had a look and I thought, Shallow Grave's a film I haven't watched in a few years, and I remember really enjoying that. And Elisa, my wife, who was watching it with, she'd never seen it before, so there it was, decision made, we'll watch Shallow Grave. And I liked it.
Not sure you said it.
But that's the thing, because what I remembered about it was actually different to how it ended up being. I remember thinking it was very Danny Boyle, but I think what I mean by that sense was it's very Ewan McGregor, because Ewan McGregor is very good in it, and he's very young, and he's the same kind of snotty, snidey guy as he is in Trainspotting to an extent, probably more so actually. So that's probably like the lingering memory of it that I have, but I came out of it this time, the second time around, thinking it's a good film, there's a good story. But that's all it is. There's no extra.
It's a film.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like I meant.
Probably should be on the poster there. It's a film.
It's a film.
It is a film.
That I saw.
It is a film. I watched it.
Yeah.
It was good.
But what I mean is, it's a very filmy type film. There's nothing to just, you know. There's nothing that brings it out of the crowd from any other film that you may have watched in the last.
Yeah,
3 months.
Exactly. It's entertaining, it's interesting, good characters, good story, it moves along a pace, there's a kind of hook to it. Have you guys seen, I know Brooker, you may not have seen.
Years and years and years ago.
Oh, you have seen.
Was it 93?
4,
okay, it would have been not long after it came out that I saw it.
Okay.
Same for me, really. It's been a while.
Been a long time?
Yeah.
Okay. So, do you
I liked it, though.
Yeah, do you remember kind of what it's about? I'll explain it anyway for the benefit.
I think there's a grave in it.
There's a grave.
It's not very deep.
Yeah.
There's three flatmates. A new flatmate moves in, has a suitcase full of money. He dies unexpectedly. They have to decide what to do with the money. Simple as that, really. That's the basic premise. Obviously, there's more interest and intrigue that comes into it because there's two criminals who are hunting the guy who had the money. What's the money for? Then they have the sort of dilemma of, well, they have to dispose of the body, and the sort of psychological impact that has on Christopher Eccleston, and then his relationship with Ewan McGregor and Kerry Fox, who is two flatmates. There's a lot going on in it, and it's very expertly put together. But it is a film. That's all I keep coming back to.
Brooker's review.
Yeah, yeah. Brooker's
nailed it.
It
is a film.
Nailed it.
It is a movie. It's entertaining. It keeps you guessing, I guess, till the end to see what happens with the money. It's a little bit predictable at the end. The very final scene is like what happens to the money.
Yeah.
And it's a bit like, oh, well, yeah, of course.
It's the only way it could have gone.
It's the only way it could have gone, really.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it, just perhaps not as much as some of Danny Boyle's other things. And I think, like, I've got a list here. I've actually printed this out. It was actually typed up and printed.
Well, we were quite impressed when we saw this, weren't we? Because we were like, we don't make any notes.
We were impressed. / worried that there might be a test at the end.
I've got a few questions.
This isn't one of my podcasts, don't worry.
If I think of a Danny Boyle film, I'm thinking Trainspotting, I'm thinking Slumdog Millionaire, 28 Days Later, Sunshine, Trance, perhaps, as well. They all have something unique about them in terms of the visual representation of the story. Trainspotting 2 was the same, which I know
I've not seen
Tony,
yet.
You haven't seen yet, Brooker's not got any interest.
We'll leave that alone.
But even if you don't enjoy his films, I think you can recognise within his movies there's something unique about his style.
Yeah.
I guess in the way that Tim Burton's got a unique style.
Not quite as obvious as Tim Burton.
Has got a unique style. Whether you like them or not, there's J.J. Abrams.
Chris Nolan.
Yeah. There's something about it that you instantly go, I know who's behind the camera.
You know that film.
There's a dude beating one out over an American flag. It's a Michael Bay movie.
Exactly.
Whereas
this doesn't have anything that made me sit up and think, this is very damn good. I think perhaps because it was his first feature movie, he made it after making a string of TV movies, bit parts of TV shows and other like episodes and things. This is his first actual thing.
Yeah.
So I think he's still finding his feet, which he then arguably perfected with Trainspotting a couple of years later, '96.
I won't say Trainspotting is a badly made film. I didn't want to say that. I think it's well made. I just didn't like it.
Which is fine, because that's absolutely, you know, allowable.
Yep.
I'm allowing it. Yeah. As
the arbiter of all things.
Authority.
But what I mean is, I know it's a bit of a joke, the fact that I don't like Danny Boyle films.
Yeah.
It's the fact he doesn't make films that I enjoy watching.
Exactly.
I don't think he makes shit films, or he makes films badly. He made Trance. Trance was bad.
Rosario Dawson.
I like Trance.
A specific moment.
Well, yeah,
Rosario
yeah.
Dawson.
But that was a bit weird, because wasn't it his... Was she his wife at the time, or girlfriend? Or...
Really?
Yeah.
What, Danny Boyle?
Danny Boyle.
No.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And there she was with the shape and...
Foof.
Foof.
One word.
But, yeah, so there's a weird thing. But I liked Trance. I thought it was okay. Mainly because of James McAvoy. So I came away from Shallow Grave this time thinking, yeah, it was okay. It was interesting. I enjoyed it. But it's not his best. It's not as... memorable, perhaps, as I thought it could have been.
Yeah.
So yeah, Shallow Grave.
It was a film.
It was a film, and it was good.
That he watched.
Brocker, can you do an even better review, or a similar review for what you've been watching this week?
So I was going to do a couple of films. And there was a choice for a couple of films. I've got a couple of films delivered to my house yesterday that I recently bought, but it's also... that time of year where I also watch another film every year in February on Super Bowl weekend. So 4 days ago, you can listen to me review Any Given Sunday because I haven't watched it.
Okay.
But what I watched last night is a film I watched in September, I think last year, so I rewatched Deepwater Horizon.
Ah.
Okay.
Now I know this is going to bring you and me to a head because you do not like Pete Berg.
However, no, I don't. No, I find him like Bay, like, you know. Eastwood, David Ayer, sorry. Yeah. Right, sorry.
It's going to be a fight. This podcast. I can see it coming.
But however, I've heard good things about Deepwater Horizon, so I am going to check that out.
So Deepwater Horizon is 2 of 3. It's the second Bergenberg film that there is. So the first one was Lone Survivor.
Right.
Then we got Deepwater Horizon, and then for us in March, I think, we've got Patriots Day. All of which, as far as I'm aware, everything I've heard about Patriots Day is excellent. I've seen it. But Lone Survivor was awesome. Deepwater Horizon is amazing. It's watching it on Blu-ray, it has a bit of an issue, whereas it was better on the big screen. But this film had... So it's about the Deepwater Horizon. It's a floating oil rig.
Okay.
Or was a floating oil rig.
Yeah.
That was... What it done is it was responsible for drilling the hole that caused the BP spillage in the Gulf of Mexico in 2010.
Right.
So... there's a whole story about how the guys in the suits and control the money got involved, said no, just do your thing, done it prematurely, and then there was an explosion. The entire rig's on fire, and the only person that can save everybody is Mark Wahlberg. That's basically the film. It is immense.
Yeah.
It is absolutely brilliant. Watch it on the big screen, it's better, but I think it's had the biggest soundstage in history. This film. I don't think they built the rig to scale. I don't think anywhere in LA has got that kind of room. Excuse me. But they did build this massive soundstage for this oil rig and then set it on fire. It's really tense. It does this amazing thing. I think I wrote it when I done my review last year as well. Like, in Lone Survivor, Pete Berg, in the name of his film, ruined the film. He spoiled the end of the film with the title. Mark Wahlberg was the only person that survived in Lone Survivor. He was the Lone Survivor.
Right.
And I kind of went into this one going, well, at least they haven't spoiled it in the title. But they do spoil it 10 seconds into the film, when the first thing that you hear is the guy that Mark Wahlberg is playing giving testimony to Congress about what happened. And I'm like, well, no one knows he survives. This... fuck.
Yeah.
But brilliantly... halfway through the film, you actually forget that that's happened. And you're genuinely worried that Mark Wahlberg isn't going to make it out of this film.
That's good.
He is really, really... I know a lot of people shit on Mark Wahlberg. I'm quite a fan. But he's really very good in this. And you don't get an awful lot of emotional range out of a dude running around in the fire trying to save his mates. But there is a little bit, like there are little points where it gets the better of him, and he, like you want to reach through the screen and give the poor guy a hug. Yeah. It's really, he does really well. I would say that if you haven't seen Deepwater Horizon, it ain't Battleship. It's not of the regions of shit that Battleship is. Pete Berg actually made a really good film with this. I would really recommend watching it.
Did Pete Berg do the Universal Soldier sequels?
I do not know.
I don't think he did.
Was it a son?
I couldn't tell you.
Oh no, wasn't it? Was it the son of the guy that made Sudden Impact? It wasn't Pete Berg, it was someone else.
Right,
but we're in a pub and I don't have
with
IMDb
no
access.
This is how we struggle, you know.
We might not be able to do this.
Okay.
So, yeah. We'll see.
But no, Pete Berg done Friday Night Lights. Have you ever seen Friday Night Lights?
No, I haven't.
The film Friday Night Lights is great.
Yeah.
It's based on a book. It's really, really good. But he also produced the TV show. In the TV show, if you haven't watched it, you must.
Okay.
Even if you don't like American football, it's one of the greatest TV shows.
I think I watched the first episode.
Not a fan? It's okay if you're not. I mean,
it was quite distanced, I thought. Considering most people like had sold it to me as being very emotional, full of depth and all this character, and I watched it feeling a little bit like I was part of.
Yeah. There's definitely that thing is that it is very emotional, and there is a lot of connection to it, but you have to let it build.
Yeah.
You need a few episodes to let it build, and it tries so hard to ruin it at the beginning of season two as well.
Oh, really?
Beginning of season two, me and the wife came very close to turning it off, and we're like, let's just sit through it. It's five seasons long. It couldn't have been that bad because it got three more seasons.
Yeah.
It was that bad. It was lucky to get us three more seasons, but the other three seasons are great.
Universal Soldier,
Hyams, isn't it?
John Hyams, director, son of Peter Hyams.
Yeah.
Yeah, you run on the right lines.
Peter Berg Hyams.
Yeah, potato. Yeah.
Peter Hyams made Sudden Impact, the Van Damme Die Hard in an ice rink.
Basically.
Van Damme, thank you, ma'am.
But yeah, that's Deepwater Horizon. I would really, you know, Pete Berg does a great job. It looks amazing. I think it does lose a little bit. Even on Blu-ray, I don't have the very nice Dolby Atmos sound system that it tries to sell me at the beginning.
Yeah.
It looks nice, better in the cinema, but it's really, really very good.
To be fair, of all of them, I think, like all the directors I mentioned there, I think he's the one who I like the most of all of them. So yeah, I will look that up. For me...
It's just our ongoing joke, though, isn't it?
For me, I've watched five films... But I am leaping off the back of the future, past, possibly, like, I don't know what time zone it's in, but podcast about Resident Evil.
Uh-huh.
Because last week I watched all five in preparation. Yeah, in two days. In 2 days, yeah. I was off work with a bad back, and this didn't make it any better.
No.
Okay, right? Because, yeah, I started, I bought a few, right?
You paid for them as well.
I did.
I paid. On TV at the minute, I think.
Well, two of them are on Netflix. No, three... So yeah, two of them are on Netflix. Afterlife, which is number four, and Retribution, which is number five, are on Netflix. All the rest, like
film four, have been showing them this last week.
I was one week too bloody early.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen the final chapter yet, admittedly, and I don't know if I will get around to it on the cinema. But the first five, I watched the first Resident Evil years ago, and I thought it's okay. Wasn't too bothered. Love the games. You know, really enjoyed the games when I was growing up. But I thought, I'll do all of them, and...
That's a slog. I've done all five in 2 days just before the new year.
I think somebody on Twitter, I think, made the point, or on Facebook, that it's one of those rare franchises that the longer it goes on, the less it makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
By the time you get to Retribution, which is dog shit as high as Apocalypse, which is the second one, which I think... is equally as bad.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is anymore.
Yeah.
It's mutated like some of the creatures in it.
Yeah.
And like the ending of Retribution and how it sets up the final film, I was like, you have to laugh! I don't know.
Retribution is, well, Fight 2, actually, I forgive 2 a lot. Apocalypse, I forgive a lot because it's got Nemesis in it. And Nemesis, I thought, was done really well. And the film is dog shit, but I really quite like Nemesis. 3 and 4, I really like. And 1, I love. 5 ends with a, there's a particular monster that turns up in the last scene of 5 that's got nothing to do with Resident Evil, and I am convinced is actually stolen from Starcraft.
Okay. Given Paul W.S. Anderson, I wouldn't be entirely surprised.
Do you know what, though? I kind of like Paul W.S. Anderson. He's basically the director who goes around just sticking his fingers up at people.
What? Yeah. He doesn't care, does he? No. I mean, in fairness to him, he doesn't care. He does what he works with his wife only.
Yeah.
Right? Mila Jovovich. Yeah. He doesn't care that he makes films that 10-year-olds will enjoy, and that's about it. He just does what he does, and he doesn't do it well, but he does it.
The kind of final chapter is just clocked, Resident Evil's just clocked over $1 billion.
Right? Yeah.
You know.
People love it.
Well, he was only involved in 4 of them.
He was writing all of them, but he didn't direct all of them.
He didn't direct 2 and 3.
2 was Alexander Witt,
yeah.
The only film he's ever directed, which is probably a good thing. And 3 was Muscle Car... Muscle.
Oh, wow.
Russell Mulcahy, or Muscle Mulcahy, maybe.
Yeah,
who did... Yeah, or Mulcahy, however you say his name. Yeah, who did Highlander. Now, Extinction, I think, is probably the best one of all of them, actually. Okay. The third one, where they're in the desert.
Yeah.
I quite like that one, for what it is.
From the magical powers, she suddenly ends up.
Oh, yeah, that's a bit like. And then at the beginning of the afterlife, they just get rid of them with an injection.
Yeah.
You're all better now. But it just. It's not. But it's the problem I have with them is they're not Resident Evil.
They're not like the games. At all,
they don't feel like the games. It's like. Maybe,
I think that's purposeful.
Yeah, because it would have been. I mean, it's very difficult to translate the feeling that the games put in you. Where you
have you ever seen the Alone in the Dark movie?
No.
Uwe Boll. Christian Slater in
it? It is Christian Slater. Now that is an awful survival horror game turned into an awful survival horror film. And Silent Hill falls into it as well. Silent Hill is a great game.
The film
is okay, but it ain't the game.
No.
But it tries very hard to be. I think the thing with Resident Evil is, with the first one, Paul Anderson just went, I don't want it to be Resident Evil. Because there's not a single character from Resident Evil in the first one.
Yeah.
All the characters that are in Resident
Evil
games don't turn up.
But that's what I mean about Paul W.S. Anderson. Just basically just gives the finger to everyone.
Yeah.
That's what he does. He does what he wants to do. I admire that.
He does.
And he has made good films. People write him off as a trashy director, but
he made
the
Horizon. He made Horizon's a classic. I love that.
It's great.
It is a great film. It's true. He can do it. Like Michael Bay, he's not like Michael Bay in that he doesn't make hateful films. But he can do a good film.
Yeah, he's got it in him.
He just doesn't care. He's just making, but the films make money. They've got their fans. They're trashy nonsense. I can't say I enjoyed them. I'll be honest.
Okay.
But I got through them. And now I'm glad I've seen them because for years I've not wondered what I've been missing, but I've wanted to know
a
little bit. And Wentworth Miller was in 4. And he's one of the few people who doesn't take it very seriously.
Was he whispering? Doing his Wentworth Miller kind of like
he was whispering, yeah.
Which completely against the character he's playing.
Chris Redfield.
Who is usually a very loud fucker.
But I'm sure you've gone over all this in the last podcast, so I'm not going to beat the drum. But
So I talked about Resident Evil, the final chapter, 4 days ago.
Yeah. interesting. What did you think of it, Brooker?
Well, going into it, I've heard a lot of good things. From people that aren't just fans of the franchise like me, I've heard a lot of good things. And I'm going in with pretty low expectations, but I do think it will be all right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I started to watch the first one again. Because I haven't seen it for years. And all of them just in my mind, I can't differentiate them. They're just one
big, they're all big
amalgamation.
So trying to work out what happened in the individual seasons of 24.
Right. But I tried to rewatch the first one and I was enjoying it. And because I thought it's basically very Paul W.S. Anderson. It's like, you don't see any zombies or anything, monsters, any. For a bit, I was 40 minutes in and I fell asleep.
I have to admit, the first one, the CGI for the liquor in the first one is ghastly.
Terrible.
Yeah.
It looks terrible. But any film, and this goes for number 2 as well, that has Slipknot and Marilyn Manson in the soundtrack is all right with
me. It's made for you, isn't it?
True. True. There is a good amount of metal in there, to be fair. But no, It's got its fans. It's not high art. It doesn't pretend to be. And I admire it for that. It doesn't give
for the most part, none of its fans are Resident Evil players.
Well, there you go. Yeah. So, that's what I've been watching. we're going to move on and do our triple bill, which we went a bit back and forth on this, didn't we, on what we were going to do. Our original idea was to do films that were set in the Midlands, which is a lot bloody harder than you might imagine.
We came up with two between all three of us.
Yeah.
It's not going to make much of a triple bill.
I don't know, I did find one. I was doing a bit of research and I did find one that stars Cliff Richard, like set in the 70s.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was called.
We've definitely won there.
I would have probably talked about that. I would have dug it out and watched it.
Lock is all you get out of it.
Lock, yeah.
Which he set in Birmingham for about five,
on the
M5 five seconds.
On the M1.
Yeah, and Sightseers, which begins in Redditch. So there we go.
That idea fell over pretty quick.
Yeah. Yeah, didn't really work. We struggled with that one. So then we were like, maybe we do like something to do with the Oscars, because we've got the Oscars coming up in a few weeks. You've got, you know, Fail Critics have got the two Oscar specials that are going to be coming up, talking about predictions.
We do a preview episode, like a prediction episode. We encourage people to chip in their thoughts and they win a prize.
Yeah.
I mean, considering the DVDs that
we have additions for the prize this year as well.
Yeah. So someone's got things to look forward to.
Ah,
a DVD that was posted through my letterbox. I really didn't.
Could it be?
No, it's not.
A special screening of Essex Space Bin, maybe. Owen, what do you think?
I'm not even going to give them. We need to stop. This is the thing, though. This is going to be a rule. No more publicity for these movies, because that is how Mob Handy ended up in our top 10. We shot ourselves in the foot by talking about it so much.
I don't think you can stop now. I think Essex Space Bin is... It might not... I know it's not supposed to be this year's Mob Handed, but I think it's a thing. Certainly for the first quarter.
Yeah, maybe. Let's hope it just dissipates.
It might disappear by March, don't worry.
Yeah. So we have that preview, and then we do a results episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, Brooker, you're going to be on and Paul as well.
Yep.
With me and Steve. And... two episodes together, one week after the other. Usually a lot of fun.
Yeah, they're usually really good. Yeah. I'm making the effort to watch all the Oscar films I can.
I was going to say, you're watching them all, right?
I'm going to try to.
Yeah.
I'm struggling to get hold of some. The famously banned guy from the US now, I can't
remember. Oh, yeah.
And this film ain't coming out here till March, so I don't think even in the dodgier corners of the internet that I can look, I don't think I'll be able to get a copy.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to try and watch everything.
Mm. Which is more than I'm doing. I keep.
You mean you don't fancy watching Passengers in 13 hours? Because I'm sitting through that.
You're doing that. You're taking the bullet.
It really is.
Yeah.
Because Passengers is such a tenuous one.
Yeah.
As is 13 hours. Like, you know, best sound mixing or best score. You're doing the hard fucking yards for this.
Yeah. Yeah, I am. But it'll all be worth it if Suicide Squad wins an Oscar. You will not hear the end of it all year.
Well, it'll happen now. Given how things have gone in 2016, you know, this is bound to happen, right? Yeah. However, today we're going to touch on the Oscars by doing something which is could be fun, could be mercilessly offensive.
The most un-PC.
Yeah.
Triple bill.
So you have been warned. Okay. We're going to do our triple bill of films and ideas for films that if they were made, they would be guaranteed. Almost guaranteed an Oscar nomination. So think of the most Oscar-y things you can imagine, and that's where we're going with this. So,
Moonlight. Moonlight is definitely up there.
Brooker, why don't you kick us off with your first one?
You weren't expecting titles for these films, were you?
Not necessarily.
Because I don't have any.
I have a title for one of mine.
Mainly because I came up with these like 10 minutes before I left the house. So my first one will probably be the most offensive one.
Get that out of the way then, that's good.
So, it's going to be a... I'm just saying this so other people that can hear me and hope I don't get my shit kicked out.
Lean into the mic.
It's going to be a bisexual transgender soldier in Afghanistan fights for the right to become a Navy SEAL. It's basically going to be G.I. Jane meets Boys Don't Cry. Starring Eddie Redmayne, but Eddie Redmayne only plays it when he's a chick.
Nice.
Amazing.
That doesn't seem like it's on for at least a nomination.
Absolutely, it's got to be nominated, there's no doubt about it.
You thought about any directors or.
No.
What do you reckon?
For a film like that,
yeah.
Not Michael Bay.
Not Michael Bay.
John Waters?
Well, that sounds like a John Wall
film,
doesn't it?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. I mean, you know, I say G.I. Jane. Ridley Scott did a decent job with G.I. Jane, so I'll have Ridley Scott do that.
But this is one of his studio movies, you know, the ones he produces.
Oh, yeah, no matter whether he directs it or not, he'll have Scott Free Productions all over the title screens.
But in seriousness, there is the LGBTQ stuff. There's a lot of misunderstanding as to what that means and to what, you know, those classifications. I used to work in LGBTQ, and the sheer levels of this. There's genderqueer, there's queer, there's trans, there's a million different derivations. So you can imagine Hollywood picking like the most sort of stereotypical story. Oh, yeah.
See, Hollywood will be more offensive with this than I was there. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah, exactly, for that reason. And I think that, but there's like this confusion, isn't there, about the Oscars. Like last year was the Oscars So White, where basically it was, the issue was they didn't have even a token nomination.
No.
And that offended people. I think, rightly so, you know, the fact that it was, anyway. But then like, doing the opposite, people are accusing like things like Moonlight, like we just made light off, of being the kind of, well, they've included that just because...
Well, I have to admit...
Which is like completely the opposite to what people were accusing them of last year.
Can't win.
But with, you know, without A, derailing the podcast, or B, revealing everything I've written in my review, because I've reviewed Moonlight, I've only done first pass, so I ain't going to be reviewing for a little while, about 2 days ago. But the thing that I hated about, what was the Redman movie? Danish Girl.
Danish Girl.
The thing I hated about the Danish Girl was, I cannot understand what these people go through. Right? It's impossible. I'm not a transgender person, I cannot understand it. So I expect, especially if you're going to be an Oscar nominated film, I expect you to make me or help me understand. And it didn't.
No.
Moonlight did.
Okay.
In a big way. That's, not the transgender thing.
But different kind of life.
Because again, I can't, it's impossible for me to, I'm a straight white male. It's impossible for me to know what it's like to be a questioning black kid in Florida.
Yeah.
You know, it's impossible. So if you can make me feel something for that kid, you've done your job. And Moonlight did.
You say done your job, but as we're probably going to figure out with our prediction,
I'm going to piss all over it with my next two things.
That doesn't necessarily mean it's Oscar worthy. It's not completely different, you know.
But, you know, Moonlight, I do make light of it, right? But same as Loving, I took the piss out of it. I don't think Loving deserves his Oscar nomination.
Okay.
But, you know, Danish Girl can fuck right off. And I'm
Should I make Steve watch that next time?
The Danish Girl. Owen, what's yours?
So, in a similar vein, I've gone for another disabled character.
It's worth noting that Owen has written more for his first film than I wrote in all of my notes combined.
I'm thinking. Like, I came up with this as an idea, and then looked up some like history to it and some facts and things. I'm calling the film The Undesirables.
The Undesirables.
Undesirables.
It sounds like a Channel 4 show, like The Undateables.
It's like basically, I'm going to get Clint Eastwood in to direct it, because I think it's probably the only film. You know, he's the only director who could do this. It's the story of a disabled American man in Nazi Germany.
Oh my God!
Which is the home of his disabled father.
No way.
Who's unwell, but his father raised him alone because his mum died in childbirth.
Oh, it's already a laugh a minute.
Exactly.
Riot of a film.
There we go. So, you know, despite this setback, he qualified as a lawyer. He emigrated to the US and became a human rights
activist.
Jesus Christ.
So this is all pre-First World War. His dad becomes ill. He goes back with this reputation and he sees the stuff that's happening in... I've gone for 1938, where it could be any just before the Second World War broke out. So he's looking after his dad. He sees all this thing. He sees the Catholic Church having this problem with eugenics with Nazis, which I don't know if you're aware, they were basically anyone who was disabled was sterilised.
Yeah.
And at one point there were 250,000 people sterilised.
Lovely.
And then there were 70,000 people who were euthanized by Nazis. And it was that meant that the Germans almost revolted against the Nazi party. So he's the guy who encourages this. That's what I'm thinking. Him with his disability, his intelligence, his intellect, his...
I see a BAFTA for best musical or comedy.
I was going to say, it's a comedy, yes.
So yeah, Clint Eastwood to direct this American guy.
Right.
In Nazi Germany.
Played by Tom Hanks.
Well, I also thought about this.
Doing a slightly vague German accent as well.
Christopher Waltz to be a Nazi.
I thought he was going to be in this. When you were screening this, I was like, Christopher, yeah.
He's the Nazi, obviously.
Is he being Hans Lander, basically? Is it Hans Lander from Inglourious Basterds?
A toned-down version of that. I also
the disabled Hans Lander.
I thought the son is going to be... He's probably just, he's in a wheelchair.
You are disabled then.
I thought about getting Michael Fassbender as well. But maybe Christian Bale, someone with a bit more Oscar clout.
As the lawyer?
As the lawyer.
Yeah.
Just a bit older. And then I was thinking about his dad, and I thought, they never really go for anyone that old. Sean Penn?
Maybe.
He's about 10, 15 years older than Christian Bale.
Yeah. You could imagine him as a grumpy old disabled man.
Bring back his shit curly ginger hair from Valletta as well.
Exactly. So I thought then you can combine that as well, like having lots of flashbacks. And the flashbacks are in black and white.
Ah, very good.
See, now there's the Oscar.
What about your director?
Is it Clint Eastwood?
Eastwood.
Oh!
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's good he's walking around in the film for no reason.
Yeah, he's just turning up there.
I thought you could have Michelle Williams as well as Christian Bale's girlfriend, who's glamorous and back in America.
It's a good one.
So, worrying.
You know, contrast between two lives. So there we go.
I think you've got all them. You've got all the things ticked there, haven't you? You've got history. Yeah. You've got, you know, tragedy. You've got the Nazis. You've got like disabled people. You've got Oscar-winning stars.
Very baited.
It's all there. Yeah. It's all there. Yeah.
So
but good. It's a good one.
Thank you.
Okay, my first one is along similar lines.
I knew that.
Well, we're getting all the disabled out of the way first.
That's what the Nazis do.
So. Mine is a bit shorter, but we can flesh it out as we go. Mine can be summed up, and I put this in an email to you guys previously, and I did it as a joke, I'm sorry. But it's Kate Winslet, starring as a paraplegic former astronaut who survives domestic abuse at home, and the title would be Space to Breathe.
I know you love a pun, Tony. That is quite classic.
So, you know, she was this high-flying... Obviously, Kate Winslet, Oscar bait in herself.
Yeah.
You know, she's got the American accent, which she can do.
Yeah.
She was, like, one of these high-flying astronaut women. You know, she was a pioneer for women's rights for all this. She was a, you know... And then something happens and she loses her arms and legs. I haven't really thought this through in depth.
Just wakes up one day and they're not there.
Shoot comes off the...
that's a good idea. Yeah. She
crashes.
There's an accident with the shuttle on re-entry.
Yep.
She has to parachute out. Oops.
All of these stories are copyrighted, if I agree.
The only if you want them, come and ask us.
But then she gets home and her husband... Played by who could play a bit of a bastard?
Joel Edgerton.
Yes, that's a good show. Okay,
nice.
But nothing to do with the fact that I watched him in the film.
Yeah, I was going
to
say. Yeah.
That was quick.
Yeah. All right, Joel Edgerton as her husband, who was supportive when she was famous and she was doing well and all this, but now she can't walk or hold anything. Yeah. He doesn't like it. So he's angry, he resents it, he's like, I don't want this life. And then he starts hitting him. Which is really bad because she can't hit him back.
Do we get an armless and
run
sex
away
scene as well?
Right, yeah.
He's blonking her on top of him.
But
she doesn't like the use of technology, right, to film it, because if you've got to film Kate Winslet with no limbs.
Well, it's going to be this sort of... that's what they also love, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah, special technology. But then, obviously, you know, she fights back, not with her fists, but in the right way. You know, she takes him to court and gets into a really big, epic court battle, and she was like, I'm the first astronaut! You know, and they all, you know, they all love her. They feel for her, you know, and he gets locked away at the end.
Perfect.
And she gets the happy ending. Well, of sorts.
Well,
yeah. With no arms and no legs.
She goes back into space.
You can be happy with no
arms. She goes back into space at the end. They give her bionic arms and legs, and she goes back into space. End.
The sequel, the bionic arms stop working, and she's just floating. She can't do fuck all about it. She's just bouncing off of walls.
And then an alien starts domesticating. Space Debris 2 coming soon.
Isn't it interesting that we've all gone straight away for our first pitch with someone who's disabled?
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I'm being extraordinarily flippant with this, and it's you know, but
like, that's the point of what we're doing.
Yeah,
is
yeah,
to
yeah.
Just highlight how ridiculous.
I don't necessarily move away from the disabled thing for my other one.
Okay,
I am.
But
okay. Still,
yeah, I but like, I can only think of Daniel Day-Lewis as an actor who's been disabled.
Is that my left foot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like physically disabled.
I know, I'm struggling, I can't think.
But we've all gone for that because we think.
Because there's plenty of not necessarily actors but films that have, again, nominated a disabled bit or people with.
But this thing like Rain Man.
Rain Man, born on 4th of July.
Yeah.
You know, even things like Million Dollar Baby, which ends up with no legs at the end of it.
Yes, yeah.
That's it. It's the whole thing of they want to see, you know, big stars playing people
right.
Who are... Yeah, who are less fortunate. When it would be far more powerful and impactful if it was a genuinely disabled person playing a very serious kind of role. But they don't do that.
No, never.
Yeah. Which is a shame.
No.
But, okay, round two. Brooker, what's your second one?
My second one... okay, so I put some thought into the actor for this one because it doesn't work without this actor.
Yeah.
So it's going to be the true story in as many air quotes as you can get.
Okay.
And it's going to be Walt Goggins. Plays a guy, a disabled guy, a guy in a wheelchair in Louisiana, who wins the first ever court case to allow him to marry his pet dog.
Wow.
I'm not making any kind of judgments to southern people or Walt Goggins or people that like their dogs, but that's just where I went.
Incredible. Is this like the Oscars warning about what happens when you let gay people get married?
Pretty much.
Look where it goes!
Look what happens!
You've got, oh, in that case, you've got...
Can a man not marry his son?
I was just like, I have Jeremy Irons.
Does he want to have the sex with the dog? Does he want the full Monty?
Well, that's just gross. Why would you ask?
Because if you want, presumably they're going to consummate the marriage.
Well, maybe, or maybe not. Maybe the whole film is actually they can't consummate the marriage, so it's annulled. I don't fucking know. Marrying the sex sounded funny. I didn't think that was
even
like
better.
Smith goes to Washington. So, yeah.
Even better if he worked for Rover. That's going into a very sort of, you know, potentially dark area, isn't it? A challenging area.
Well, bestiality.
Bestiality.
Pretty challenging in so many ways.
So yeah, good one. Owen, what's yours?
Tarantino.
Ah.
I think he gets a nomination at least. Tarantino usually. So I've got him to direct an epic about some American footballers who are caught in a doping crime syndicate.
Oh.
So there's that angle, there's something that makes it American again.
Yeah.
That, you know, patriotic thing, the hook.
Very Foxcatcher.
Yeah. Except in the really just batshit crazy world of Tarantino.
Yeah.
So obviously Samuel L. Jackson. Possibly, that is a good call. I thought Samuel L. Jackson, Jamie Foxx, and I'd bring DiCaprio back, but I'd have him as a kind of sniffly, crazy lunatic type character. Maybe the dope dealer, the guy who takes the money from the gangs. And then, but I also thought with Foxx and Samuel L. Jackson that they'd be in a gay relationship.
Ah, there you go.
And the bosses.
Although he's not old enough to be his dad.
Yeah, maybe. could be.
It could be Dan's wife. Oh,
there we go.
With
it. There we go. There's your twist.
Yeah.
At the end, you realise Samuel Jackson's the guy that left his mum.
Wow. Oh, that'd be, yeah.
Like the end of Old Boy.
Yeah, yes. It would be. Like the end of Old Boy, yeah.
I also thought about another trope, so I want Jared Leto to be involved as the coach of the football team.
Yeah.
But I want him to put on about 10 or 12 stone. Just for the role.
He probably would.
Yeah.
Just to make him suffer, the bastard.
He's kind of, kind of crazy sort of method acting lunatic that you get. So he can do that.
Okay.
Just to make his character a bit more snobbish.
Yeah.
My main protagonist is going to be Jaden Smith.
Oh, okay.
Son of Will Smith.
Son of Will Smith.
You know, there's that.
Yeah. Raving lunatic.
Yeah. I get him to basically be the young up-and-coming star.
Okay.
So I think he's about 19.
Yeah, he's getting on.
So he'd be the sort of guy who's coming through, who's kind of stuck between the gangs. He's got Samuel L. Jackson, Jamie Foxx, Leonardo DiCaprio, trying to get into dope, and stuck with Matthew McConaughey as a cop.
Of course.
He's trying to catch the gangs, and he's trying to convince him. So you've got the crime, you've got the gangs, you've got the protagonist, who's just a guy caught in the middle. I think it's Tarantino.
Everyone's a winner.
Yeah. I would also bring in, because at the minute it's very male-centric, Lupita Nyong'o, I think, could be Jaden Smith's older cousin, someone who's got a bit of elegance, you know? And also Pam Grier.
Because it's Pam Grier.
And have
Jamie Foxx's mum.
Nice. I was going to go for Jaden Smith's grandma, but that is even better. I can just imagine her with a shotgun. So there we go.
I like it.
That's what I was going for. And it's American, it's got crime, it's got heroes, it's got innocence, he's got Tarantino,
all-star cast. Yeah. That perfect. I like it.
Not a disabled person in sight.
No.
Any dogs.
Not physically, anyway.
No bestiality, no disabled.
There you go.
So.
It's the sign on the pub.
That's why we chose this podcast. Yeah. Okay, mine is a biopic. My second one, and it can be summed up in the title, which is one word.
Yeah.
Obama.
Okay.
Obama, what's your name? Anyway. the biopic, but it's set like it's got two people playing Obama. So you've got Denzel Washington, obviously, playing. This is a bit in the future, or it could be now. Like Denzel's old Obama. So this is set in the future, and he's telling the story. You know, in his rocking chair or whatever. Of, you know, everything we've seen, like the death of liberalism, you know, Obama fighting against, you know, injustice and all this entire, and then becoming afterwards this grand statesman who, you know, everyone goes, please come back at the end. So it's in flashbacks, it's being told. So you'd have maybe someone like Donald Glover or Anthony Mackie as young Obama.
Oh, yeah.
Possibly. Like, or Obama as he is now. I don't know. I was
Michael B. Jordan?
Yeah. Even better, perhaps. Michael B. Jordan. And funnily enough, I was thinking of Tessa Thompson as Michelle.
You know, if it was going to be the Oscars, though, they would get a white person to play Obama.
Well,
to play. They wouldn't give it to a minority
Michael
actor.
Fassbender?
Yeah, exactly.
And they were worrying I was going to be the offensive.
Well, yeah. But, like, you know, and then I was thinking, who would play Trump? You know, would it be Trump playing Trump? Because he's so egotistical, he plays himself.
What about Gerard Depardieu?
Maybe. But I kept thinking, who would play a young Trump? Who could possibly play a young Donald Trump? Can we think of anyone? Ben Foster?
Nah. Ben.
Is he too gruff and
I think he is a bit, yeah. Who's the guy who was in Hello, Hello, What With? The guy from Star Trek.
Chris Pine?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
He could do the slime, probably, couldn't he?
Yeah. Timothy Oliphant or something?
Oh, yeah, that's a good shape. Timothy Oliphant.
Who is Timothy Oliphant's like 55, right?
Yeah, but
I know he doesn't look it.
Trump is like 70.
Trump will have to be, yeah. He'll have to be a relatively older geezer or somebody playing older.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you'd have, you know, you'd have to have other people in it, obviously, people who are causing problems with Trump and, you know, Nigel Farage maybe could have a cameo. Who would play Nigel Farage?
Danny Dyer.
That's it.
Danny Dyer as Nigel Farage. So yeah, that'd be it. So it'd be that really vibe. Maybe director, maybe Spielberg could be coaxed into doing another presidential one after Lincoln. You know, given he's had form with that before, it'd have to be somebody, you know, proper.
Scorsese's going to play up in.
Maybe.
Oliver Stone.
Yeah. Oliver Stone, but I don't think it'd be that conspiracy. I think it'd be much more of a kind of flag waving liberal, you know.
Yeah.
He need Michael Bay.
The anti Bay, yeah, we need. So yeah, that's mine. That's my number two. Brooker, number three.
So we'll stick with the political bit because I've got a ever slightly political one.
Okay.
And this one will be directed by Oliver Stone.
Okay.
Guaranteed. And it's almost a sequel to Snowden.
Okay.
Right? Instead of Joseph Gordon-Levitt, it's Johnny Galecki, the shit Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And he will play the White House insider that opens a Twitter account to talk about what's happening in Trump's White House.
Yeah, the rogue POTUS.
Yeah, POTUS account. Snowden for the ADHD generation. Pretty much all you get.
I like that.
For the ADHD.
Yeah, I like that. That would work. Well, have you heard that they some people reckon that might be Russia. That might be a Russian thing that they're trying to do. Yeah.
Well, like, the surreptitiously, Twitter account.
Yeah, you know. But I don't know. I follow it anyway because it gives me some hope.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. Yeah.
But it has to be Johnny Galecki because he just looks like the kind of guy that would open a road.
Should we just have the entire cast of The Big Bang Theory co-starring with it?
Pretty much.
As well.
I think you'd have to.
Yeah. All right, Owen, then. What's your third one?
So I did think about doing a political one, but you're never quite sure with the Oscars, which way it's going to go for political dramas. So instead I thought, well, I'll just go Tried and Trusted, based on a true story, biopic kind of thing. And I also thought about the other type of Oscar film that they love is big, grandiose productions. Anything that's big and epic. And so my final one's going to be based on Edward Teach. Blackbeard.
Okay.
So you can start the film in North Carolina. So you know the story of Blackbeard is he retired after he was pardoned and he got really bored.
Yeah.
Basically, and went a pirate in again. Set it in North Carolina. There he is, bored off his tits, being harassed by all these people. And I genuinely think, of all the films I pitched, this is the one to get Daniel Day-Lewis
on. I was just going to say that.
Daniel Day-Lewis as a bored, older Blackbeard.
Or Dustin Hoffman in his book outfit.
So Daniel Day-Lewis is, I think, menacing talk. When he goes back onto the seas as a pirate, you've got all that.
Is it like basically Plainview, Daniel Plainview as a pirate from There Will Be Blood?
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
I'd watch that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, there you go. I think his best mate would be like Mark Rylance, the King of Oscar kind of influence coming through.
Hey, drink your grog! That could be the title, there you go.
Perfect.
There will be grog.
So I think at least you've got best actor and best supporting actor nominations there.
Yeah.
I think as well, because Lieutenant Robert Maynard, I learned, was the guy who caught Black. So you'd have everything building up to their confrontation.
Cool.
And I thought for Robert Maynard, Adrian Brody, kind of sniveling British officer.
Yeah.
A bit of like, you know, screen presence, but also at the same time, he's not going to compare with Daniel Day-Lewis. He's going to be overshadowed. So yeah, and I thought maybe Spielberg as well to direct it. Picking under. I think you know, I was thinking about Lord of the Rings, and they've got the big epic battles and stuff. Master and Commander, the stuff at sea. Again, just a big sea battle, ships and huge sort of epic cast.
Yeah, Peter Weir.
Yeah.
He'd do a good job.
Yeah. So that was my third choice, Tony. You got yours?
Well, it's along sort of similar lines in terms of the big epicness.
Okay.
So I thought, you know, we've got a long time. You know, Gladiator kind of did this, but you still don't get many films that do the kind of big, super big, epic Cecil B. DeMille kind of fabulous whole production. So I thought, let's do properly Jesus. Right?
Let's Do Jesus is absolutely the title of this film, and it has to be a musical.
Well, I thought the title would simply be Christ. But the problem with that is you'd have people go, yeah, exactly. You'd have people go, Christ. And then it would easily become a Zucker comedy. Christ! Right? So you'd have to be very careful. And you'd have to say, no, it's just Christ.
Yeah.
It's not Christ! It's just Christ. Etc. So, has everyone just stopped and turned around as I said that?
They're wondering what Christ etc. is.
So it would be set obviously during Jesus' life. It does the lot. It shows his birth, the star in the sky, all that jazz, you know, the three wise men. Would have to be played by a very, very significant sort of trio of people. I don't know who that would be.
Pappies.
The Sugar Babes.
The Sugar Babes. If it was a Zucker comedy, it would be there. It just goes through the whole thing. Pontius Pilate, played by a real bastard of a Brit villain, probably. You know, you need like a younger sort of Alan Rickman kind of figure, really, I think, for that.
So quite like what Joaquin Phoenix done for Gladiator for that.
Yeah, he could be good, actually. Yeah. You could have him in as Pontius Pilate. And then...
Shia LaBeouf.
Maybe he could be Jesus because he's mentally. I don't know who played Jesus. It's a tricky one. You know, but I wouldn't want it to be like camp. It would have to be Jesus as not. It wouldn't be necessarily big beard, long hair, just a bloke. But it's like, it's a big epic, but it's not camp. It's not like, you know, it's more grounded. Like Gladiator. And maybe Ridley Scott would be a good director.
Have you seen Exodus?
Yeah.
Maybe not then.
Who would you get as Jesus in that case? I mean, Christian Bale again.
Kit Harington.
You know nothing, Jesus Christ.
He's going for sort of a younger one. I mean, Ty Sheridan.
Yeah, well, he was only 30 odd, wasn't he, apparently? Yeah. So you'd need... Maybe Ty Sheridan would be too young.
Yeah, a bit older. Yeah,
Michael B. Jordan. I don't know.
That would be epic.
Well, Black Jesus would be like Jesus Kevin Smith. Yeah.
The outcry if he didn't get a nomination.
Yeah.
And they cast Jesus as a black guy and he was just completely ignored.
But he's just religion. You know, religion's a big one. You know, we've touched on disability, we've touched on race, we've touched on politics. Religion is the other big potato. And I think Christ can't get bigger than that.
Yeah.
So
excellent.
There you go.
Yeah, interesting though as well, again, that was the only religious one.
Yeah. True. We didn't do any about Allah or Muhammad. That'd be another good one, Muhammad.
Yeah. Although difficult to film.
Yeah. Certainly in Trump's America. Yeah. Anyway. But yeah.
Also difficult to film without annoying every Muslim in the world.
Exactly. Yeah, true.
All of the Muhammad scenes are off camera.
Yeah, we are not recommending this. Please do not put a fatwa on the failed critics. Okay, this is not. We know this is a bad idea. That's our Oscar triple bill, pre-Oscar triple bill.
Do you think you kind of learned anything by looking at any of these things? Like, what would make an Oscar movie?
I think I learned that we should never pitch films.
Not in public, anyway.
No, we'll keep these ones to private.
No, I think it's the whole thing of, it's got to be someone going through genuine trial and adversity, you know, coming out the back end with some kind of success.
A moralistic tale.
Yeah. A moral tale. Or a story of somebody who, you know, is a figure in you know, the world who has made an impact on people.
Yeah.
But it's funny that we all kind of went to the same things. We all went to disabilities and politics.
Yeah.
All the shit that we see from like November through to February every year.
Yeah.
You know, except for Mad Max.
None of us went for sci-fi.
Well, because it's like, that never gets an Oscar.
Well, The Martian, you could sort of say it was a bit sci-fi-y.
Martian was. I mean, Arrival this year.
Arrival arguably hasn't got enough.
No. But Arrival also won't win anything.
No, well,
but
well
they just
no,
never,
they probably not.
No sci-fi movie has ever won an Oscar, though, has it?
No.
I mean, not even 2001 Space Odyssey.
Which is ridiculous.
In contention, I mean, it's...
But, you know, I think it's, you know, the conversation's been had a million times. It's criminal that Amy Adams isn't on that list.
It's bizarre. I mean, I don't get it. She was the first person I thought of who might get an Oscar nomination. It's very, very strange. Yeah, they'll give one for American Hustle, which weren't all that.
No. But yeah, it's strange. I mean, there is definitely a pattern to Oscar bait. So when we keep slagging off Oscar bait, I think we've given examples of what immediately kind of springs to mind.
Yeah, definitely.
And is the kind of thing that...
But that's the thing about me going through trying to watch all of them, they're all the fucking same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All of them. You know, like with Loving, I watched 4 days ago. We sit and watch, I watch it, and I'm like, I know every single beat that's coming.
Yeah.
And actually, that's the thing that makes me think it's not worth an Oscar, because I know exactly what's going to happen at every single turn. I'm like, this, I'm bored.
It's like what I said about Jackie, which I think you said you really liked it.
I love Jackie, yeah.
Yeah, I really
like it. I mean,
Jackie,
it's good, it's perfectly. Like set tone,
yeah.
Acting's good, script is good, but it bored the arse off me.
It's because all of that. The boxes, are, yeah. It's a biopic. It's tragedy. It's political. It's
yeah, and yeah. It was just so conventional. I think.
Do you think you'd think a bit different if it came out in June? When it wasn't clearly vying for Oscars.
It was. It's the kind of film that would never come out in June.
No, of course not.
Okay, and if
so
it came out
let's look at it another way. So you missed it at the cinema.
Yeah, if you watched
didn't
it.
Didn't win an Oscar, you watched it on Netflix.
Maybe. I mean, if I'd had a run of watching Mophand did Kill a Bitch and Essex Space.
Oh, it's not that bad.
But then it would give me, like, the different...
Yeah.
Maybe I'll be in a different mood.
Why hasn't Essex Space been nominated for a BAFTA? That's what I want to know.
They don't get it. They just don't understand it. That's the thing.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah.
I think Essex should do their own BAFTAs.
The show is sponsored by WKD.
it would be best film. Killer Bitch, Mop Handy, yeah. Essex Space Bin.
Yeah.
Danny Dyer gets best actor every year.
Yeah.
And best supporting actor.
Yeah.
But Danny Dyer, of course, part of an Oscar-winning film.
Yeah, which really makes me sad.
Yeah.
You have the Paul Field Appreciation Awards.
Yeah, also to Danny Dyer.
Yeah. It's the thing about Danny Dyer, wasn't it, when we inducted him into a Corridor of Praise, was whether he should be in it. Because generally the rule of Corridor of Praise is you can't have won an Oscar. And he was in an Oscar-winning short.
Yeah.
So almost didn't make it in.
You cheated for him.
You
bent the rules.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's about it, really, for this pub-based... Fail critics, which hopefully you have been able to hear.
It's good because everybody's starting to give us a look.
Yeah, we tried to hide the microphone behind
a menu.
I don't know if it's working.
Well, no, because we can see it's a mic. All everybody else can see is the top of what might be a weird.
It's true. This mic could be misinterpreted.
We are cooped up very close together in the corner as well.
We've spent the last hour talking about what we're going to do with this.
Yeah.
But
Christ.
Christ. Recommendations then. What are we going to recommend, Brooker? What about you first?
Recently gone onto Netflix is a Jurassic Park esque zombie movie called The Resort. Saw it at Fright Fest last year. Really good fun. Really liked it.
Nice.
Awesome. What about you, Owen?
On Shudder, which is the subscription service I mentioned a couple of weeks ago and last week, they've added a film recently, which I've written down and then closed my notebook and forgotten. Grave Encounters.
Ah, yeah, I like that.
Yeah, good, really good, interesting, weird, surreal almost, film footage about some people trapped in an asylum. It's very good.
Yeah.
They've also added Book of Shadows, Blair Witch 2 film. Which is,
I mean,
one of the worst movies.
2's only good now since the new Blair Witch film has come out.
Oh, let's not go there. I love that new one.
Yeah.
Let's not go there.
Blair Witch 2 Book of Shadows is absolute poppins. So
yeah.
I didn't
hate the new Blair Witch, I have to admit, but I really fucking hated the original, so I had exceptionally low expectations. I think that helped.
Yeah, that would always help. My recommendation is on Sky. And it's Money Monster, which has just come out. The Jodie Foster,
nice.
Yeah, the Jodie Foster film with George Clooney, Julie Roberts, all about the destructive nature of capitalism and a desperate man played by Jack O'Connell, who is very good in the role.
Yeah.
They're all good. It caused a lot of ire. This there's been a lot of very, very angry reactions to when he wants to, which I know we, none of us get, really,
no,
do we?
Not here, but it made it onto our bottom three films of the year.
I don't.
Power Critics Awards.
I think that's crazy, if I'm honest.
Doesn't make sense to me.
Doesn't make any sense.
And yet, Yoga Hoses was knocked off.
Disqualified.
Yeah.
The world's gone mad. But yeah, Money Monster, a good little tight little thriller. Ridiculous. Absolutely bonkers.
Oh yeah, there's nothing realistic about
it's silly, 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 but it's fun. Well, it's entertaining, let's put it that way. Good performances. So, this is it. First ever, and hopefully not the last, live, not live for you, but live for us, Final Critics Report.
Right now the guys at the bar are going, please, for God, let them be the last. Don't let them come back.
We still haven't paid for our dinner, which we had like 3 hours ago, yeah. It's like we're milking this table. There've been a lot of people who probably wanted to come and dine in this pub.
Oh, here we are.
Yeah,
we have got the biggest table.
We have the biggest table in the pub for three of us.
Just for our little dildo mic.
Yeah.
It's
like
So, what's coming up next week, Owen?
Next week is the episode 250 special,
the biggie,
which will be me. It'll be Steve. It will be James Diamond, founder and former host, and Jerry McCauley, who hasn't been on the podcast since 2013.
Wow.
But was on it before I was a part of Bell Critics.
Wow.
So
it's very cool.
There we go. So we'll have that. We'll have our old music and jingles. Try it. I don't know what we're going to do. Oh, it's Lego Batman.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll have...
it's a good one.
Call back as well to our 100th episode, which was the Lego movie. So, nice little tie-in.
Awesome. Can we assume this is you and Steve's swan song? The old house coming back?
Yeah, that's
this
it.
This is your... we'll see you later.
We're it. I'm handing it all back.
That sounds great. That sounds really good. So, thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you again next time.
The Failed Critics podcast is presented by Steve Norman and Owen Hughes, created by James Diamond, with original music provided by Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com, remixed by James Yule of JamesYule.com. You can find us at failedcritics.com, on Twitter at failedcritics, and Facebook at facebook.com/failedcritics. Thanks for listening. And I thought that for Robert Maynard, Adrian Brody, kind of sniveling British officer.
Yeah.
A bit of like, a screen presence, but also at the same time, he's not going to compare with Daniel Day-Lewis. He's going to be overshadowed.
By his nose.
By his nose, thank you.
Sorry.
Yes, and
the records say that I'm gradually beating Owen of all of his life.
And you can't usually see me doing this, can you? But my head is off camera.
The thing is, I know you're doing it. It doesn't stop me.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.